Hi, I'm Bella Gandhi, founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host of this beautiful podcast. We're here to bring more love into your life, regardless of if you're single, if you're married, if you're thinking about becoming single, if you're thinking about becoming married or finding the lid to your pot. And we're going to bring more life into that love that you have or you want. You might have seen me on Good Morning America or Steve Harvey or The Today Show or 100 other places, but I'm so happy that you are here with us because we're going to make your life and your love better. Smart daters, welcome back to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. Today, I'm going to have a guest on that's going to blow your mind. If you're in a relationship and maybe you've been thinking about, should I stay? Should I go? My friend Kate Anthony is an amazing human being. She's been on this podcast before, and I am so excited to have her back because, y'all, she is now an author. And so Kate wrote a book called The D Word, Making the Ultimate Decision About Your Marriage. And if you've been hiding under a rock, she's also the host of the critically acclaimed and New York Times recommended podcast, The Divorce Survival Guide. She's created this amazing, groundbreaking online coaching program called Should I Stay or Should I Go? Kate's awesome. She loves to swear. She's incredibly real. I try to get her out there to date every now and then. And I can say this on my podcast because it's my podcast and I love you. Kate Anthony, welcome back to the Smart Dating Academy podcast.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for having me back. I love and adore you. And you should know that I am out there. I'm actually on the apps as we speak, my friend. And, you know, I've gone on a few dates,
Did you guys hear that? Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you're sitting there laughing because you're feeling like Kate, just know, right? It's a common malaise, y'all. It's time to get psychotically optimistic about your dating lives, everybody, because we're coming on peak dating season. But that is not what we're going to talk about today. Kate, you and I will have a private session about peak dating season and dating lives. But tell us a bit about what inspired you to write this book.
Really, all the people that were like, it's time to write your book. You need to write a book. You need to write a book. So it was all, it's them. Also, really, it was my kid saying to me, like, he caught wind of me saying to somebody that I wanted to write a book. And then he was like, Mom, you're writing a book? And I was like, yeah. And then, I mean, obviously it was like in the works. Right. And then it really got to like him saying, Mom, what's going on with your book? Hey, Mom, are you writing a book? And when your kid is like looking at you wide eyed, like, and expecting something of you, you fucking do it, you know,
cause you're the mom.
Do it.
You're the mom. Right?
Like I have to fill the shoes. I have to be the person he believes me to be.
Because what better way to get him to be the person he's supposed to be?
So that's if right.
His
that's
badass right. mom writing a book. That's you know right. what? How amazing
Absolutely.
Is that? Like she can do anything. She can raise me. She can help women out of toxic, awful relationships. And she can sit down and take all of that amazing content that's in her pretty little head and put it out on paper. That is badass.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And so that's kind of really what it was. It was stepping into my power in a way that look, we're always pushing up against our edges, right? And our growth edges and our like, sticky places. And I'm just happen to be somebody who believes in pushing through those, that like when I hit an outer edge, I go, huh, what's that? Why am I stopping there though? Right. Like, what is it that's making me stop there? Okay. Let's push through this. And so, yeah. So I did. It's crazy, but I did it.
Well, I'm really proud of you. And let's hop into this. You guys are going to want to buy 100,000 copies of this book by the time we're done with this podcast episode. And I hope you do. And I'm going to put it in the show notes. But Kate, what is the very first thing that women need to look at when they're making the D decision?
They need to look at themselves. They need, right? So the habit is to look at the other person, right? They're doing this, they're doing that. Why are they doing this? Why are they blah, blah, blah? And really the most important part of this is to look within and look at, you know, the parts of like, you can't make a major decision without being connected to the part of you that's making decisions in your life, right? And we could say sort of that's like brain function, right? Executive function, part of the brain. But really what I'm talking about is this, the capital S self, the not the person you want to be, not the person you think you should be, but like really, who are you? And so many of us, when we've been in certainly toxic relationships, which is what I talk about a lot, toxic or abusive relationships, we lose that sense of ourselves. We lose it by design because it's the abuser's job to whittle that away. We lose it because in order to be in something toxic and unhealthy and unhappy, there's a level of dissociating that we have to do. And so really the first thing we got to do is get back in touch with, who am I? Who am I really at my core? And this may differ from who you were pre-marriage, pre-kids, right? This is a new, you may never have connected with yourself in this way. I know I didn't. I hadn't, right? Because just the way I was raised and the way I grew up. And so it's an exploration that's necessary.
Okay. So when you say, who am I? It's not, I am a mom. I am a Girl Scout leader. I am a business owner. That's not what you're talking about.
No, those are roles, right? Those are outer roles.
Mm-hmm. So give, for those of us listening that are going, oh shit, I've got to look at myself. I'm a mom. I'm a this. What do we need to connect to? Who am I? Give us the dope.
So the first thing I have my clients do is an inner guide visualization. So women in particular, we are incredibly intuitive beings. And we live in a society that's the entire structure is based on getting us to disconnect from our intuition, because that's very powerful and it's very confronting and it's very scary to the system, the patriarchy, right? So, you know, everything about us, everything about what the air we breathe is designed to disconnect us from our inner sense of knowing. You've got a 60 billion diet industrial complex that is, you know, sort of the foundation of which is disconnecting women from our, like, even no understanding our hunger and fullness cues, right? Like, you're not hungry. If you're hungry, drink a glass of water, or, you know, take this pill, join this program, order this food, right? So the disconnect from self, from women, from our intuitive sense of knowing is baked into almost everything. And so the inner guide visualization helps women connect with, and, you know, we can do a little bit of it here. It's not this visualization, but it's really like, what do you know? What do you know? And it's the first thing that comes to you. It's the first voice that bubbles up from inside. And then it gets layered on with all the, you know, chatter, right? But those are usually the critics. That's usually the inner critics, right? What we're interested in is the first voice. What do you know? What do you want? What do you crave? Right? That first thing that bubbles up. And then, you know, from there, I help women deal with then the inner critics. Like, they say that it takes something like 5 to 7 positive statements to override every negative one. Our critics are really strong. really strong, much stronger than our intuition and our guides, right? But we have to differentiate because most of us don't know the difference. We just, you know, these voices are just chattering in our ear all the time and we just feel like shit. We don't really know why, you know?
Right. That's your ego just blabbering like a crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we have to get in touch with that. You've got to get in touch with your values, right? And values are not just like a list that, you know, it's not a popularity contest. Like, well, I think I should value integrity and honesty and what, right? Like, no, like who are you? What do you value? What is important to you? What in this world drives you up a wall, right? That's often a great place to look for what you value. If, you know, for me, it's like injustice, inequity, right? Any kind of injustice, I lose my mind. So it points to the fact that I have a value around justice and inclusion. And, you know, this is why I'm like a social justice person, like because this, to me, this matters, right? This is one of my core values. A lot of my clients will sort of, obviously, if they're working with me, they're working with a coach, they really value personal development. And they notice that they're married to somebody who says something like, you knew who you were, who I was when you married me. I haven't changed in 20 years, right? And besides the fact that that's not really a way to be in a relationship with another human being, it's also just a misalignment, right? Or just, you know, you've been begging your, you know, you go to therapy all the time and you do the work and your partner just doesn't ever want to engage in that process. You know, this is a misalignment. So, but you wouldn't know that if you weren't digging into yourself. And often these things then become sort of objectively clear, right? As opposed to like, it's not even like gut wrenching. It's like, oh, that's why we don't get along.
Right. We're just 100%. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. So it's not your roles, you guys. It is ask yourself, I love that. What do you know? What do you want? What do you crave? Right? Mm-hmm. What drives you up a wall? Start to get to know yourself again, because we're told to disconnect, right? So we can be sold shit. We can be subjugated. Like, there's a whole lot of reasons. So point the mirror within.
That's
number
right.
One, right at yourself and say, who am I today? And that might not be, it's hopefully not the same person you were 10 or 20 years ago, to your point, because you were growing. And honestly, the fact that you're listening to my podcast and my podcast episode with Kate already tells us you're into growth. You care about moving.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. This is like, we know who you are.
Totally. Right.
Yeah.
And that leads into, you know, why do you think as women, we're so unhappy in our marriages, or why are so many women unhappy in their marriages?
Yeah. So women are unhappy in their marriages because marriage benefits men and exhausts women. It benefits men on the backs of our labor, of our emotional labor, you know, carrying the mental load, all of that stuff. There was a study that was done. I don't know. I don't have the details of the study, but I just know that this was the outcome of it. It was a sort of a happiness study based on, you know, different genders of cis hetero people. And it determined that the happiest people on earth are married men. This is probably in Western culture.
Mm-hmm. Right. Sorry. That just
surprise, surprise. Yeah. Right. The happiest people are married men. The next happy are single women.
Wow.
The next are single men. And the least happy are married women.
Come on.
So you've got married women being the least happy and married men being the most happy. And I think that says kind of everything you need to know, right? That this entire institution is set up to support men. And literally it was, right? Like, let's go back to like the you know, the 50s even, or even beyond that. But like, I think the 50s has a very sort of stark picture of this, right? That, you know, the 40-hour work week was designed for men who had wives at home, taking care of all of the housework and all the child rearing. So you could go to work for 8 hours every day and come home and put on your slippers and get handed your scotch. And, you know, women were taught to put on makeup before their husbands came home and all of that stuff. And oh yeah, I mean, you find those old books and sort of, you know, lists of things to do to be a good wife. It's unbelievable, right? But that's what it was set up for. That's how it was set up. And then when women moved into the workforce, we then did double duty, right? We were still
feminism is an and. Feminism is an and.
Yes,
it's an and. I've That's always right. said this.
Right.
And
we're not.
And now you get to also go to work,
right?
And bring him the pistachios and his old fashioned,
right?
And look really good with your red lip while doing it.
Right. Right. I remember the, what was it?
I can
bring a bacon, fry it up in the pan and never let you forget you're the man or something. Right.
Yep.
So what was that perfume? It was Anjali. Right. That's what it was. Right. So that's what we're, you know, that's kind of what we're conditioned for. And then we move into the workforce, but then it was like, oh, but you also have to do, because we can have it all and we can be everything. And while the scales have somewhat tipped, they are far from level. And there was a Pew Research study done a few years ago that it took men who really think that they do equal labor in the house. They're feminists. They are like, no, it is really 50-50 in my home. And then they asked their wives, and their wives were like, no, it's not. And then they studied it, and it turns out it's really like still 80-20. And this is 80-20 for men who really are intentional about it.
And trying.
Trying. And
bless
so
their hearts trying.
Bless their hearts. So women are exhausted, you know, and then you've got men who don't want to go to therapy. You know, they're because why would they need a therapist when they have you? Right? So that's why women are so unhappy in their marriages. It's a lot. It's a job. It's a full-time job for us. And there's something like 65% of divorced women are like, never again.
I get a lot of them into my practice. I mean, look, yeah. I think what's interesting is we're talking about marriage, right? And I think just from a smart dating mm-hmm. perspective, mm-hmm. a lot of my clients are here, right? As humans, we want to pair bond. We want a mate, usually,
yes.
right?
Yes, so, absolutely.
But so many people come out of divorce and they're like, I don't need to get married again. In fact, I'm like, listen, keep your own houses, mm-hmm. have your own space, have a place to go back to.
That's
why,
right.
Like, if you're not raising children together, you don't have to do that if you don't
That's
want
right.
to.
That's right.
The power is in your hands to do. We want companionship. We want unconditional love. We want elevator people. But for some of my clients, they do want to get married again. And others are like, no. It's okay, but it's okay to want to find the lid to your pot.
Yes, absolutely. You know, listen, we're in absolute agreement about this. You know, one of the, I cover this in later chapters in the book, you know, the big question that I always get is like, but what if I'm alone forever? You know, and my response to that is, so what if you are, right? Like, what if you are? You have to be, you gotta love your, I mean, I hate the term love yourself, but you have to be okay enough with yourself, right? The goal is to not need a partner. The goal is to say, I want someone, I want companionship, right? That's where I'm at now. I've been divorced for 14 years. I have a really full life. I have a fantastic life. I have amazing friends. I've got an amazing child. I've got a great relationship with my ex-husband. And I have a business that is, you know, keeps me incredibly busy and fulfilled and satisfied. And boy, it would really be great to find a partner who wants to get on board with this and whose life I think is cool and want to get on board with and merge things a little bit, right? Yes, I would love to have that, but I will not die if I don't have it.
Exactly. And this is such a good point is you have, and for those of you that are unpartnered, look at all the love that exists in your life. Sometimes
right.
We only focus on our lack and what we don't have. And again, that's that inner critic that's like, well, you still don't have somebody. But if you sit back, look at all the love you do have. Write down all of the people that love you, that are grateful to get your text, that want to hear from you every day, right?
Right.
There's a lot of them.
Absolutely. And, you know, and look, I think women, we are also conditioned to believe that we are not enough unless we're partnered. We're nothing without a man, right? If we are, you know, alone, we're a spinster. What, you know, all of those things like, oh, well, what's wrong with you that you don't have a partner? And so we have to get through. So we've got the critics, right? But they're pretty well baked in culturally as well.
Totally.
And so it's important to acknowledge that like, listen, you're not, there's nothing wrong with you that you feel this way. This is how you were conditioned from childhood with our fairy tales and our prince charmings that like we need a prince to come and save us.
Yeah.
You know?
It's so true. It's so, so true. And now with marriage, you know, we've been talking about this. What if someone's marriage is fine in quotes? I highlight.
Yes. Well, so here's the thing. Like a lot of people, they say to me like, everything's fine. He's fine. He's fine. I just don't really feel it anymore. Or like, he's a great dad. He's just, right? And, you know, to those people, I say, first of all, do the inner work, right? Because we got to make sure that it's not, you know, like, look, if you are chronically depressed, if you have dissatisfaction in multiple areas of your life, then maybe we need to look at you more, right, than just the marriage, right? But if all things are equal and you are a really successful person in other areas of your life and you're happy in all sorts of areas and this person that you're married to is really fine, really fine, but you're really not in love, you're just not in love with them anymore, or maybe you realize you kind of never were, you get to choose. Women get to make a choice about how they spend the rest of their lives, right? This is it. This is our one shot.
Right.
And, right? Like, we get to be happy. We do. Women, we get to be happy. We are so conditioned to believe that we don't, to believe that we need to sacrifice ourselves for the good of everybody else around us. And you know, if your marriage is really makes you unhappy, first of all, you know, the biggest question I get is, you know, well, what about my kids? You know, well, what are you modeling to your children?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And so, and not only what are you modeling, but the model that you are giving them is their blueprint for their future relationships. And so do you want for them what you have right now? And very often, also, people be like, he's fine. He's a great dad. He just cheats on me. Or, you know, he's a really good guy. He just, you know, is a gambling addict. Right. And so when I start to peel back the layers of what, quote, fine actually is, there's often a little perspective clearing we have to do because those things are not fine. They're not fine.
And speaking of not fine, how do you know, like, that you're in an emotionally abusive relationship? Mm-hmm. Like, where do we have the line? Everyone says to each other, right?
Yeah.
But do you have an inflection point for us?
Yep. Absolutely. I do. So, I mean, it's really.
Kate, and of course you do.
Of course I do. I mean, I don't know if there's a line necessarily, but I will say that one of the things that we do is that we spend a lot of time looking at what the other person is doing. And does that rise to the level? And is that like, and it's confusing because, listen, one of the biggest tools that an emotional abuser uses is gaslighting. And so gaslighting is the sort of systematic whittling away of your sense of reality. It's denying your reality to the degree that you end up actually losing a grip on your sense of reality. So it can be really difficult to be like, well, did he do the thing that I think that he did, or is that right? So rather than focusing on what he's doing, I want us to focus on how you feel in this relationship. How do you feel in this relationship? In an abusive relationship, I'll read a few from my book. I have a list. In an abusive relationship, so in a healthy relationship, you feel safe, you feel protected, vulnerable. You feel trusting, you feel relaxed, you can feel completely free to be yourself, free to express your opinions, free to communicate things about the relationship that are bothering you. You feel safe to be independent. You feel respected and interesting to your partner, right? Those are all the things that you should feel in a healthy relationship. In an unhealthy relationship or an abusive relationship, you will feel an imbalance of power. You know, your partner will use control tactics to make you feel emotionally powerless and as if they have dominance over you. You'll feel that you can never do anything right, right? You're like, your partner's going to tell you what you need to do to make things okay. But when you do the thing, it's not the right thing, or it's not done the right way. And then it's your fault because you missed the mark, right? But in an abusive relationship, the mark is always moving. The target is never static, right? You're never going to hit it because the goal is not to have you hit it. The goal is to have you jumping through hoops. In an abusive relationship, you're going to feel really extreme highs or low. You're going to feel like you're soulmates one day, and the next day you feel completely like decimated, right? There's this deep, deep soul connection, but then there's the threat of being destroyed, right? Like it's highs and lows. And then you're going to do everything in your power to maintain the connection because that's what you want. That's what you're here for. That is what you believe the true nature of the relationship is. But pretty soon you're going to hit a snag, and then you're going to spiral into another, you know, low point.
Another valley.
And the highs and the lows like this is what creates a trauma bond, because you get addicted to the high and the dopamine hit of that high. And then you're constantly chasing that high. So a trauma bond is actually an addictive chemical reaction that you're having. In an abusive relationship, you feel like you never know who's going to walk in the door, right? Which version of him is coming home today? You feel like you're always to blame. Right. All abusers make you feel like you're to blame for everything that goes wrong in the relationship. Right. Even if they take responsibility for some of the relationship issues, they're going to somehow flip it on back to you. Right. If you only do X, then I wouldn't have to do Y. Right. Very often you feel confused and foggy and unclear. So this emotional abuse can take a mental toll on you. Because of the gaslighting, because of the unclarity, right? You start to feel brain fog from trauma. And so now your reality, like the gaslighting is making you question all of your reality. And then the brain fog is making you believe that like, oh, maybe they're right because I don't remember things anymore. you'll feel like the relationship is one-sided. You like you give and you give and you give, but you're not kind of getting a lot, right? You call the therapist, you try to get the relationship into, right? And then very often people in abusive relationships feel like they're always sick. So the amount of stress hormones that are coursing through the body of somebody who's going through everything I just described can actually create autoimmune diseases and chronic health issues. And a lot of times when people get out of these relationships, their symptoms magically disappear because you're not producing that level of cortisol that's just toxic for the body.
You're living in fight or flight.
You're living in a constant trauma response. That's right. That's right. Ugh. So those are the things that, you know, you want to look for. And I think in dating, you know, look, these are the things that you want to look for in early signs of dating too, right? Because most of these things are present in the beginning somewhere. And so this is why Bella tells us to go very slowly and to not dive into the deep end, because these things do, you know, what ends up happening is we dive in the deep end and it's amazing, it's perfect, and we're on that high that I talked about. And then when it starts to reveal itself, you are chasing the thing that you had in the beginning that was like, wait, but this is what the relationship is. And it's like, when we go more slowly, you can start to see these things develop and emerge a lot more clearly, because you're not in the brain fog. You're not in the sort of woo woo la la, you know, you're keeping your head on straight.
Totally.
Right. And so these things, but they do emerge. I know that half of these things were absolutely present in the first 3 months of me dating my ex-husband.
Totally.
But I was so in love that I just thought, well, no, but that's the relationship, right? This is just something we can clear up and get back to the love. But that was the false promise. That was the carrot.
That was Houdini. It's an illusion.
It was
that person at the very, very beginning that we're all like, but I just want that guy back. That guy was Houdini. It was an illusion.
He did not exist.
He didn't.
He's not real.
Right. People show us who they are. It's up to us to believe them. And they're showing you. And to what Kate is saying, we take things slowly when we're dating and diversifying your funnel. Okay. You got to have compare contrasts in there, ladies and gentlemen, right? You've got to have multiple people in your dating funnel, because what happens is you can lose objectivity if you only
have one. That's right. I was going to say, you get perspective by having multiple people, right? You're giving yourself the gift of perspective. You're like, oh, with this person, I feel safe. I feel secure. I feel heard. I feel understood. With this person, I feel a little bit crazy. It's exciting, but like, I feel like we keep missing the mark. Like something keeps like misfiring, right? And like, you know, as Bella will tell you, like, you get those like butterflies and those like those crazy feelings, like run the fuck away, because your body actually doesn't know the difference between anxiety and excitement like that. And so these are stress hormones. It's the same thing.
100%. And I've said this before on this podcast, but I'm going to say it again for the people in the back. When you're feeling the butterflies and the heavy chemistry, so much of chemistry is familiarity.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
This person reminds you of someone that was bad for you.
Right. I feel like I've known him forever.
You have.
He's your father and your mother combined, and your ex-husband, right? Right. You have known him forever, and your body knows it, because trauma lives in your body. It doesn't live in your brain. It does not live in your brain. It lives in your body. And so if you're having this physical experience, when I met my ex-husband, I'll tell you what, Bella, if this isn't a red flag, I don't know what is. Every time we were apart, I had extreme stomach problems. I was nauseous. I couldn't eat. I was vomiting. I had diarrhea. And if that doesn't tell you, like, my body was responding to serious danger.
Wow. That's like fight or flight responses.
100%. 100%. And when I was with him, it would dissipate because I think I thought that he was actually the one who was going to solve, you know, make me feel better, but he was the one causing it.
Right. Right. Yeah. And when you're away from each other, it triggers your anxiety really, really high. Even though this is the person that's causing your anxiety, the only thing that mitigates the anxiety is being in their presence.
Right.
And that's
and so
a
I
whole
other
loop
love.
Of the illusion.
Yeah. And I thought that was love.
Right. Right. Right.
As so many, as we, you know, so many of us do.
When people tell me, oh, when we're together, we're fine. It's just when we're apart. I'm like, amazing. Not amazing.
Right. And some of that could be red flags for an abusive relationship, because if it's like when we're apart, he gets really needy or he gets critical or he's, you know, what he's doing is trying to put a wrench in anything in your life that doesn't revolve around him. Right. So that's a red flag to look out for.
Wow. These are, you know, you talked about cis hetero relationships. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, this stuff happens in any relationship. True,
it really does. Yes, very true. I think there are certain things that are more true in cis hetero relationships. Like, look, there are absolutely abusers of both sexes. There are narcissists of both sexes. The numbers are not even. They're just simply not. I hate to say it. And, you know, because the way that we condition women to be codependent and we condition boys to be narcissists, right? There is an entitlement. There's an inherent entitlement that we raise men in a patriarchy to have. So that's, you know, that is that. And so in a lesbian relationship, you're not going to have the exact same power dynamics. But there are certainly power dynamics that show up in relationships. There are abusers on both spectrums, all genders, all sexualities. And I've seen it play out a lot with the lesbians, in my community, a lot of them. So, sometimes it's different. Like, we're not going to have the exact same thing that we were talking about with women carrying the mental load, because, like, we don't have the historical context, the patriarchal historical conditioning in gay and lesbian relationships or other, you know, what's the word? Whatever. Sexual preferences or whatever. And, you know, whether you're pan or, you know, bi, whatever. We don't have the same historical patriarchal infusion or foundation. And we've all been raised in this culture, right? So it affects all of us.
Oh, it's so funny. As you were talking about this, I flashed to one of my clients. She's female, mm-hmm. But she's bi. I'm like, God, I'm kind of jealous. You've got 100% of the dating pool that could be of interest to you, right? So she likes men, likes women. And what was interesting is she's dated scores of men in New York City. And, you know, as we went through the dating process in the beginning, we're like, okay, is it going to be men or is it going to be women? And so she went through a few women and ultimately decided she wanted to be with the guy. But what I found most interesting is that one of the people that was pushing back on our slow the physicality down, don't go to each other's houses, was another woman. She's like, I don't get this. I just don't get it. And our client was like, this is just not, I'm not ready for this. She's like, but why?
But what? Because, you know, lesbians turn up to the second date with a moving truck. Like, that's like, of course she doesn't get it. I know, it's crazy. Yeah. I mean, I think that there's a different relationship pace that lesbian relationships take. And, you know, this is just a cultural phenomenon, right?
Right.
That's so funny. This woman was like, but I don't get it. Why are you not?
But I don't get it. And she got really pushy and a little like not nice about it. And we ultimately threw her out of the dating funnel. Right. And she's now happily dating a guy. But it was really interesting to me that that was the person that was pushing hardest on that. Isn't that interesting?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I can totally see that. And I can totally see why, but it's so interesting. Like I'm sure you experience this too, which is like, you know, you really know who someone is when you set a boundary with them, right? Mm-hmm. Or you break up with them. Like you really find out who someone is when you break up with them or you try to set a boundary, right? The people who are like, you know, good humans. I mean, not that this person's not a good human, but like when you set a boundary with someone, their response should be, oh shit, okay, sorry, got it. Right? Or like, okay. I respect that. But when they get angry and they push back, it's like, ooh, okay. You know, your boundary may trigger somebody else. That's totally appropriate. That happens all the time. But how they respond to that trigger and how they, you know, process it and right. Like it could be like, ooh, ouch, that I need a minute with that.
Yeah, right. That hurt. And that was like a paper cut.
Oh, wow. Okay. Your boundary really triggers me. How can we work together so that we're both comfortable? Right. Cause the boundary that you just set triggers my like abandonment issues, you know, and I want to feel safe in this relationship too, right? Like whatever. But when they turn it on you, then you've just found out how they handle conflict. Like, boom.
And thus again, slow dating.
Kicked out of the dating funnel.
This is why we date slowly, so we can see all of these exposures. Because you spend enough time with somebody, you will find a point of friction.
Yeah.
And it's not friction or conflict isn't bad in and of itself.
No.
It's one's response to conflict that determines, okay, is this potentially a good bet or run for the friggin' hills?
Right. Exactly.
And speaking of running for the hills, talk a little bit about, you know, I love your definitions, narcissist, sociopath. How many of them are running around? I once read a statistic that 10 to 15% of people running around could actually, they're not diagnosed NPD because narcissists don't do therapy, right?
Right, exactly.
Diagnosed. So kind of talk to us about the N word and the S word, narcissists, sociopaths. Who, what, when, where, why?
Well, narcissism is a spectrum, right? On the one end, there is sort of a healthy sense of self and perhaps a benign sort of like, these are the people that will turn every conversation around about themselves. They're not out to hurt you. On the other end, you've got narcissistic personality disorder. And then you've got, you know, somewhere along the spectrum, you know, further out towards the NPD part of the spectrum, you've got people who are really, narcissists are not out to hurt you. They're out to get something for themselves. They're always out to get something for themselves. Usually their sense of self, because they actually have a very fractured sense of self. Yeah. They don't have a sense of self. And so, they're trying to get that from you. And the danger becomes when you don't provide it for them because you can't, because it's not yours to provide, they turn on you. And then someone with narcissistic personality disorder is a lot more dangerous. And so a sociopath, so the main difference between a sociopath and a narcissist is that a narcissist has almost no sense of self at all. They have very low self-esteem. And so like I said, they're trying to get their sense of self by attaching themselves to another. So this is why they choose really amazing people, because they see something in you. They think you're amazing. They want what you are. They think that if they attach themselves to you, it'll rub off on them, or it will reflect on them, because they really only see people as how they will reflect onto them. And but this is all because they have no sense of self. They've almost no self-esteem. Whereas a sociopath has an extremely high sense of self and very high self-esteem. And you are just, you know, tools and pawns in their game, right? And another difference, so like when a sociopath, so sociopaths and psychopaths are really like, there's a lot of, they're differing opinions on what makes them different. But in terms of the DSM, the diagnosis, they both fall under the diagnosis of antisocial personality disorder. There's no such thing as sociopath or psychopath in the DSM. It's all antisocial personality disorder. And so again, it could be a spectrum kind of thing, but there's very little agreement on the difference. So someone with antisocial personality disorder, you know, narcissists suffer from a lack of empathy. Sociopaths also suffer from a lack of empathy. There've been tests done where they, you know, hook them up to electrodes and whatever, their brain scans, and they do brain scans, and a narcissist, show their empathy centers do not light up on the brain scans. And the same is true of someone with antisocial personality disorder. They do not, their empathy centers do not light up. However, when shown pictures or photographs of someone in pain or crying, the empathy centers of both of these people do not light up. The main difference is with someone with antisocial personality disorder is that the pleasure centers of their brain do. So they get off on hurting other people, or they get off on other people's pain. And what better way to, you know, to sort of give themselves that shot than to actually create it for you, for themselves. Really gross. Really gross. Right.
So, you know, it sounds like being with a narcissist is way better than being with a sociopath.
I mean, I guess if you have to choose.
If you've got to choose heads or tails, I say this tongue in cheek, you all.
It's terrible no matter how you look at it. And you're right about the diagnosing, because most people with narcissistic personality disorder are diagnosed when they go for treatment for other things entirely, for an addiction or, you know, for something else. And they get diagnosed with NPD as a sort of byproduct of that. But really it has, you know, they're, like you said, they're not seeking therapy.
No. Right. It's interesting. It's like, can you tell if somebody's, you know, you can think of certain media celebrities, politicians, like, are they narcissistic or are they sociopathic? Who knows?
Who knows? Who cares? I don't want to date either one of them.
Who cares?
Right.
The high GHQ guys, high and good husband qualities, everybody.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Good husband. We're talking about bad husbands today.
We're talking about very bad husbands.
We're talking about low GHQ today. Mm-hmm. With Kate. We're looking for high GHQ. You know, Kate, any other gems you want to drop on us?
Oh my gosh.
You've got so many.
I do. This book is really, my book is full of stuff. It's full of, I really try to cover all of the, you know, addiction, mental illness. Like, do they know it's abuse and can they change? Which is one of the biggest, such a huge question that people ask. And will couples therapy help? And I think that that's a really huge one. Like, first of all, you should never go to couples therapy with someone who's an abuser, ever. Abuse is not a relationship problem. It's not a communication problem. Abuse is an abuser problem. And it is contraindicated to go into couples therapy with someone who's abusing you. The only thing to do with someone who's abusing you is to leave them.
And that is a... Emotional or physical.
Oh, physical for sure, but that's it's much more dangerous. And so that needs to be done with the help of a domestic violence shelter. And with a victim's advocate, right? You need to work with an advocate to help you get out to safety. It doesn't have, you don't have to go to a shelter, but your local domestic violence shelter will have an advocate on staff that you can talk to. So you can make a safety plan. I actually do have a safety plan in the book as well as parenting, sample parenting plans, co-parenting agreements, all sorts of, I'm trying to cover a lot in this book. So
you put your heart into this book. And who is this book for, Kate? Is it for people that are debating? Should they stay or should they go? Who should read this?
I feel like everyone should read it because it has really good, like, help, you know, how to be in a healthy relationship. I just think it's like, it's good information for everybody, but it really is written for women who are trying to decide whether to stay or go, who are standing on the precipice. Because a lot of women who are in their marriages that they are, you know, struggling with, it could be difficult for them to purchase this book because of privacy concerns. This is not something you want showing up in your shared Amazon order history. I think everybody should buy one or two of this book, one or two copies to give to their friends. If you ever have a friend who comes to you and says, I'm really struggling and I don't know what to do, give them this book.
Yeah.
It will really, really help them. And I don't say that because I wrote this book and I want everyone to buy it. I'm saying it because I really believe in it. I really believe that this book, it has the answers that your friend, you, whoever is looking for.
I'm going to expand the scope on that, right? There, mm-hmm. You could be listening to this relationship and maybe you just haven't gone through the 30-minute legal marriage. But this is also really useful if you want to break up with somebody.
100%. 100%. Yep. Yeah.
Right? Divorce is a legal contract, but that's love right. is not. And if mm-hmm. you're trying to get yourself out of a marriage, yes, right? Then you need to have a divorce. But so many people come to me having been in toxic relationships that, you know, to some extent, thank goodness, didn't lead to marriage. But this book yeah. can help you no yeah. matter what the contract is.
That's right. Absolutely. 100%. Thank you for saying that.
I just wanted to highlight that mm-hmm. this is for anyone who's in a relationship, but you're having trouble extricating yourself because
yeah.
to some extent, you don't know what you want, right?
Mm-hmm. And that's right.
And so I love Kate. I love all of Kate's work. So like she says, buy this book, buy a couple. If you know someone needs this book, but they can't have it delivered to their house for whatever reason, right? Just, you know, wrap it up, you know, give it to them mm-hmm. yeah. in an undisclosed location.
Yeah, so, put a fake cover on it. They have nice little. So actually on my website, kateanthony.com/dword, there is a page that is, and it has suggestions for how to read the book if you need to do it in private. And I have links to some book covers that fit the book that you can get on Amazon. And so that you can, you know, people can sort of have it, you don't want to have it lying around, but if it's in your purse, you don't want someone knocking it over and having it spill out, right? So there are a few suggestions for how to read it, sort of how to get it surreptitiously. But your local bookstore is always the best option. And you know, the other thing I say is that I think if you're an attorney or a therapist, this is also, you know, get a stack of them and hand them out because people are constantly, I know, talking to their therapists and their attorneys about this conundrum. And it would be a good thing to for them to have in their office to be able to hand to people as a good source of information. And they'll remember you for having, you know, been the one to provide it. So.
I love that. Well, Kate, you're always, you know, you always have a home here on the Smart Dating Academy podcast, and you always share such thoughtful, and useful and executable gems. So thank you for coming. And I hope your book, you know, I hope, you know, there's not enough paper to publish all the books that you sell. So
oh, let's like guess. All right. I don't want to, you know, be responsible for mass deforestation, but also I'll take it.
Right. I'm just putting that out there for you.
And yes.
Smart daters.
Thank you, my love.
Oh, you're so welcome. And I hope this episode resonated with you. And if it did, and also share it with your friends, people in your office, people that need to hear this. You all know someone who's potentially thinking about this, or more importantly, maybe should think about this, but they're too afraid to say it, right? Just say, hey, my friend Bella's podcast is pretty good. And she had her friend Kate on today. I think you might enjoy this. So do your part in creating good karma for yourself in the world. Share the episode, rate it, write a review. I read your reviews. I love every one of them. Thank you so much for listening. And until next week, I can't wait to drop some more gems on you. Have a great week. Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.